This week in KMA Land, Page County supervisors passed data center moratorium. Nebraska Governor Jim Pillen announced a statewide data center moratorium. Smokey D's Wannabes be Shindig 26 champions. Red Oak EMS agreement process completed. Brianna O'Hearn appointed new Clematis City Attorney. And a fond farewell to a KMA Land legend. I'm Mike Peterson. Page County officials are the latest to deal with the controversial data center issue. By a 2-1 vote Tuesday afternoon, the Page County Board of Supervisors approved a moratorium on data centers in the county. Supervisor Todd Maher proposed the moratorium, calling it a placeholder for the county. Maher says the moratorium would allow the board time to conduct research and review the county's current ordinances covering such facilities.
Maybe we don't need an ordinance. Maybe we're covered under our current zoning laws and regulations, but it allows us to at least get time to research, understand, because I don't know a lot about the data centers.
Maher says the moratorium doesn't impact data centers already in place in the county and could be rescinded at any time.
If we took the time to review the zoning laws and we felt like, well, we're pretty well covered, we don't have to have the moratorium. But this just basically gives us a chance to do some research and look at it and, you know, review what's in our zoning laws and if there's any gaps there that we need to shore up.
Maher and Supervisor Brian Rogers voted in favor of the moratorium. Rogers says he supports it as long as reviews are conducted quickly. Supervisor Judy Clark voted against the moratorium, calling it unnecessary. Clark says the board is jumping the gun on the data center issue.
I stated before that ISAC is working on some things, talking to other counties and how they're doing it. And it's mainly the large counties that have great big data centers at this point. If we're going to do it and then we're going to take it off in a couple of weeks, I think that's crazy.
Clark announced that FMTC is holding a meeting for local officials on data centers next Tuesday evening at 5:30 at the Red Oak High School Auditorium.
I think some of the smaller data centers that are in place for internet people and capabilities are a little scared about all of this because you're lumping data centers into all one thing, and not all data centers are the same. And until we can learn some more about it, I think it's foolish to pass a moratorium.
In order to amend FMTC's meeting, the supervisors moved its next regular meeting to next Tuesday at 3:15 p.m. In other business, the board appointed Ollers and Cooney attorney Tim Whipple to represent the county in the Iowa Utilities Commission's hearings concerning MidAmerican Energy's certificate application for the Nottoway Valley Solar Project. Nebraska officials are also dealing with new data center development, flanked by department heads and state lawmakers at a news conference Monday. Nebraska Governor Jim Pillen formally signed an executive order primarily suspending a variety of tax incentives for new data center project applications and establishing a new task force on data center development. The governor says the task force, which is a collaboration between the Nebraska Department of Economic Development and the Nebraska Department of Water, Energy, and Environment, is to look into additional possible safeguards surrounding the state's natural resources from data center use.
It's critical that we protect our consumers. It's critical that we protect our water and don't have excessive consumption of our water when we're talking about these. So these are things that are really, really important. And I think I want to make sure that I'm crystal clear. This is not a moratorium on data centers. It's really important that we bring to light the critical issues of it.
While emphasizing the executive order is not a moratorium on new data center development, the governor says the order prohibits any new large-scale data center applications being approved under the Imagine Nebraska Act.
We just simply believe that we do not need to bring people together by incredible tax incentives. We need to make sure that we attract givers, not takers, invest people that love the state of Nebraska like everybody in this room. It requires the Departments of Economic Development, Revenue, and Water, Energy, and Environment to work collaboratively when looking at project proposals so they can determine if they fit in the best interests of the state.
Jesse Bradley is director of the Nebraska Department of Water, Energy, and Environment. Bradley says the task force is an opportunity to examine best water management practices and ensure local governments have the necessary tools for zoning and other activities related to data centers and water use.
I think this is just a great opportunity to educate and learn about all the great practices Nebraska has as a state, but also examine those and make sure that those practices are going to ensure we have sustainable resources for the future. Building off of the work that was done on energy last session, I think this is a natural fit to now really examine the water side of things and make sure that we have really effective policies.
At least a dozen county boards of commissioners in Nebraska passed moratoriums on data center development in their respective counties. When the smoke cleared last week, if not the heat, one team stood alone in the 2026 Shindig Barbecue Competition. Smokey D's Wannabes endured hot temperatures to win the fifth annual competition's grand championship Saturday with a score of 703.9544. The Altoona-based team placed third in the chicken category, ninth in the pork ribs division, sixth in the pork division, and eighth in the brisket division to take the top title. It's Smokey D's second Shindig competition and second grand championship overall. Team leader Jeff Wilkerson attributed the victory to luck in an interview with KMA News.
It was super hot today. We didn't sleep much last night, but, you know, it all paid off in the end.
Wilkerson also credits lessons learned from other competitors for their success.
Iowa Smokey D's, they've helped us, and we took a class back in March with Hot Daddies and Wags, and they helped us quite a bit too. So I recommend their class.
Yes,
it's helped us. It's turned things around considerably. Yep.
Wilkerson's fiance, Lindsay Zimmerman, has followed her significant other through his barbecue endeavors and enjoys the competition.
We met on Bumble, and then he said, after a couple weeks of hanging out and getting our relationship going, he said, you know, I think I'm going to get back into barbecue. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I had no idea what this world was, and it's incredible. The people are amazing, the camaraderie, and just the team spirit of everyone around, and the support is it's Iowa. It's awesome.
Zimmerman also praised Shindig's organizers and volunteers for the competition's operation.
All the volunteers do an amazing job. Revitalize Shenandoah does an amazing job. The volunteers for KCBS, everything is so well organized. It's a thankless job, and we're definitely thanking them.
Hot Daddy's Barbecue, the 2023 and 24 Grand Champions, took the Reserve Championship for the second year in a row with a score of 703.3940. Never Easy Barbecue placed third with 702.2400. Red Oak officials have completed the long and sometimes arduous effort of securing emergency medical services agreements with surrounding communities. City Administrator Lisa Cotter told the Red Oak City Council Monday night that the process of securing 28 e-agreements for the cities of Stanton, Villisca, Elliott, Emerson, and Grant is completed. Under the agreements, each community will contribute an annual monetary amount over the next 2 years toward the Red Oak Fire Department's Advanced Life Support, or ALS, ambulance services. Cotter says the Emerson City Council approved the agreement earlier this month after rescinding a similar pact with Malvern.
Now, I think the only one that had one more small question was Villisca, and I reached out to Villisca. And they were sending, I think it was on Friday, that they were going to put them in the mail and that we would return those. So we do successfully have all 5 2080 agreements secured now. I think that was, you know, a challenging process, but I do think that it's the right thing for everybody.
Efforts to secure EMS agreements began last fall when Cotter noted that more than 10% of the agency's EMS calls originated outside the Red Oak Fire Department's response area, and that other communities the agency responds to weren't contributing monetarily to Red Oak. Cotter says the agreement calls for 4 payments spaced out over the 2-year contract period.
It's just under $24,000 that we receive per year collectively from the 5. So we'll have that for this fiscal year. We wrote it that they'll pay 2 times a year in October and April. So that kind of affords those smaller communities the chance to get their September and March property tax payments in house before they have to pay us. So we tried to pick the time where they have the best chance of having their highest revenue income.
Under the agreements, Villisca will contribute $10,000 per year, Emerson $7,200, Stanton $7,141, and Elliott and Grant $1,733 and $356, respectively. Plans for a special utility project in Red Oak are on hold for at least a few more weeks. By unanimous vote Monday evening, the Red Oak City Council tabled action on MidAmerican Energy's proposal for installation of an overhead power line on First Street north of Washington Avenue. Chad Gilliams is MidAmerican's Business and Community Development Manager. Gilliams told the council the company wants to replace the existing 69,000-volt underground line east of Washington Avenue and East Reed Street. Gilliams says the line experienced a failure in August 2025.
Our contractors attempted to repair that failure without success. Unfortunately, it determined that the cable is bad, as opposed to the ends of the cable, where they can terminate that. They can fix those a lot of times.
Gilliams says the line is also 50 years old and located in what's called a duct bank. Gilliams says directional boring is not a viable option because an open trench is necessary in order to lay new conduits, something that would take 1 to 2 months. He says an overhead transmission line is not uncommon.
If you look just north of the courthouse, it is all above ground. Basically, we're just going to extend that southward 800 feet is the plan. The proposed overhead line would follow the same route as the existing underground. The new poles would be constructed of weathering steel and would replace the existing streetlight poles with streetlights transferred to the new transmission poles. So existing poles that are there would be replaced, and then we would put that light on our pole.
Councilman Janice Lester motioned to table action in order to inform the public about the proposal. One of KMALAND's busiest attorneys is adding another community to her workload. By a 3-0 vote with one abstention late Wednesday afternoon, the Clarinda City Council appointed Brianna O'Hearn of Shenandoah as its new city attorney, effective August 1st. O'Hearn succeeds Ron Bidding, who has served in that capacity for the past 12 years. Both attorneys were among four submitting letters of interest for the position. Others included Wilson and Pekasek of Council Bluffs and Brick Gentry of West Des Moines. Clarinda City Attorney Gary McLarnon tells KMA News O'Hearn was selected following good discussion with the council.
They looked at everything as far as qualifications, experience with city business, accessibility. They looked at support staff. They looked at price. And after some really good discussion, the city council decided to appoint Brianna O'Hearn from Shenandoah.
Council members approved a request for letters of interest for city attorneys last month, citing pending retirement of numerous city officials in the next year. McLarnon says the city thanked Bidding for his service.
He's done a great job. Mayor Hill thanked him for his service, and he's been really good to work with. But at this time, the council decided to go another direction. One thing that they also noted was, you know, with the changes we have coming up with retirements, they thought that this might be the right time to get somebody new in place. So, yeah, Bree was the person that they chose, and I'm looking forward to working with her.
Currently, O'Hearn serves as city attorney in other KMA land communities, including Red Oak and Sydney. More in just a moment. Mills County officials are finalizing proposed changes to a portion of its community health program. At its regular meeting Tuesday morning, the Mills County Board of Supervisors reviewed the changes to the general relief policy within the community health program, offered in partnership with Jenny Edmondson Foundation. The board approved an agreement with the foundation last year to begin offering the program. Jenny Ed Foundation Community Health Director Rachel Reese says one of the primary changes is how they determine eligibility for general relief. Rather than referencing the federal poverty level, Reese says the plan is to now consider eligibility at 30% of the area median income, or AMI.
What that means is that it's a little higher threshold and aligns with most people that would receive disability payments, and so also aligns with a lot of the other prevention services that are provided throughout our region.
Reese says they also added an asset limit, which is adjusted based on the age of individuals seeking assistance. She adds that during client intake, much of the information or background on assets is self-reported.
I would say probably 80% of the people that come to us absolutely need help, and they do not have any of those assets that are not eligible assets. And we're working through with VA on how to like manage the VA benefit side. We don't always put that either. And so all of it is self-reported, but we do try to do as much deep dive as we can.
In previous discussions with the board, Supervisor Jack Sayers suggested looking into an asset limit. He notes the proposals for the community health program align closely with other assistance programs in the state.
$3,000 standard household maximum assets and the 60 and above are disabled, $4,500 assets is the same asset limitation for state benefits. And then along with the assets really covers exactly what the state has. I'm not saying that people abuse the system, right? But I think I just want to make sure that the people who need it, who really need it, that there's funds available for them there.
Reese says she doesn't expect the changes to impact the program's budget, noting they also have flexibility by not allowing individuals who are now receiving other benefits, such as SNAP and Medicaid, to also seek general relief assistance. County Attorney Amber Farnan says more discussion and possible action on the changes is expected at next week's county supervisors meeting. Recent figures show construction of Page County's new law enforcement center is within budget. Sid Samuels, president and owner of the Samuels Group, updated the Page County Board of Supervisors earlier this week on the financial aspects of the new facility under construction off of U.S. Highway 71 south of Clarinda. In addition to the $16.7 million bond issue approved by voters in November 2023, Samuels says interest income brings the total amount of money available for the project to more than $17.9 million.
Because of those gains in the interest income, along with estimates that we had for gas lines, things like that, we were able to bring the project in as of May 31st, $17,887,000. So right now we're carrying a surplus there. The project still isn't completed, but we are carrying a surplus currently right now of $15,662.
Samuel says that's a big improvement from February 2025 when a deficit of $700,000 was projected.
That's using the bond dollars to their fullest extent, investing those and being able to use that bond referendum to get exactly what we talked about versus having to use other funds. So I think it's a really good improvement.
Samuels also attributed officials' diligence in keeping the project's cost down.
I'd be pretty happy with that team of people that, you know, watched your investments, watched over the project. Tony out there every single day, looking at ways, you know, using furniture, things like that. I mean, it was truly a team effort of people that, at the end of the day, is bringing this right in exactly where it was supposed to be.
Samuels adds the project still has more than $24,000 in its contingency fund. In other business, the supervisors approved an amendment to the county jail's inmate fees, increasing the room and board fee from $50 to $80 per day. It also lumps inmate room and board fees with medical costs into one payment plan and outsources fee collections to an outside firm. Repairs to a portion of Clarinda High School's auditorium are set. At a special meeting Wednesday morning, the Clarinda School Board approved repairs to the auditorium's tower panels. Clarinda School Superintendent Jeff Privia tells KMA News the new panels replace those damaged by severe weather in March.
Our tower at the auditorium had some wind damage back in the spring, pulled the panels away from the framing. We did involve insurance in that cost. Insurance is going to pay $590,000, and the district has a $10,000 deductible for that. So the difference is another $77,000 that the district is going to pick up.
Though this timeline isn't specified, Privy expects the repairs to take 6 to 8 weeks.
One panel has to be taken off at a time and then one panel added. They can't take everything off and then put everything on, as it would leave a giant hole in the building. So one panel at a time has to come on and off, so that'll take a little extra time with labor.
Privia hopes repairs begin as soon as possible. However, he doesn't believe the project will conflict with classes or activities inside the theater.
Once we get that timeline from Roggie, when the materials can be here, we'll try to schedule some things or move some things if needed, but we're hoping to get most of that done during the day. So at the end of the day, we're hoping each day that it's buttoned back up and we're able to do an evening activity and then open it up the next day, take off the next panel, add the next panel. So there'll be a little coordinating with them on how we can get that done as fast as possible.
And Privia, however, hopes the project doesn't extend into October or November when more activities occur inside the facility. Well, since this program airs on Saturday mornings, it's appropriate that we remember a well-known conservationist and radio personality whose voice was synonymous with KMA Saturday mornings for years.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Don Preeb here this Saturday.
That's the voice of Don Preeb, who hosted a weekly conservation outdoor program Saturday mornings on KMA for almost 50 years. Preeb died earlier this month at the age of 89. Born in Estherville in 1937, Preep graduated from Central Community School in Fenton in 1955. After serving in the U.S. Navy from 1955 to 59, he joined the Iowa Conservation Commission in 1965 as a game warden in Blackhawk County. Preep later moved to Shenandoah, where he continued his career until his retirement in 1997. Preep hosted his first radio program from 1968 to 2017. In an interview with KMA News on the occasion of his final broadcast, Preep says his decision to produce an outdoor-related radio program stemmed from his lifelong dedication to working in wildlife.
Being a game warden, conservation officer, dealing with the wildlife on a constant basis, daily, and the fact that most people, now I'm not going to say all, but most people are always interested in what there is in the outdoors, and most people are not of the sort to go out and look for it. And if you tell them about it, oh, that's what I saw the other day. I didn't know what that was.
Preep says he was blessed to work alongside several generations of KMA employees and recall the major shifts in radio technology.
A big change in the equipment here in the lab from way back when. Of course, the labs are different. Even the rooms are different, but we did everything reel to reel back then, and once in a while you'd spin that reel and start it up and it would go bing, you know, no, okay, we'll start over now.
Reeves said he hoped the program made an impact on KMA land residents over the years.
The thing that I really enjoy is going uptown for coffee on Monday morning and get a little comment from the Saturday program. I got a lot of feedback on that, and it's gratifying, to say the least, to know how many people are actually listening.
Preep bade a fond farewell to his listeners at the end of his final broadcast.
We're going to quit right here and say thank you for many, many years of acceptance on this program, and I really enjoyed it, but it's just time to change and do something different. Thank you, and God bless you all.
Funeral services for Don Preep take place August 1st at 10:30 a.m. at Mount Calvary Lutheran Church in Indianola, with internment and military honors August 3rd at 12:30 p.m. at the Iowa Veterans Cemetery. Memorials go to the Veterans Organization of your choice or the Nishtabata chapter of Ducks Unlimited. Memorials may be directed through Jim Preep, 4138 South Stony Drive Northwest, Hackensack, Minnesota, 56452. Let's face it, it wouldn't be summer in Shenandoah without the Wabash Arts Camp. Shenandoah Chamber and Industry Association officials marked the camp's 35th year with a special coffee event Wednesday morning. Founded in 1991, the annual camp gives children in grades 3 through 7 from KMA land and beyond exposure to a wide spectrum of hands-on visual and performing arts. Marla Hart and Jenna Hughes are the camp's co-directors. Hart tells KMA News about 150 children are enrolled in this year's camp. As in previous years, participants represent various states.
We have about 60-some that are just from Shenandoah proper, but we also have many from around Iowa, including the Des Moines area. We have from Kansas, Nebraska, Missouri, of course, right around here. But also, this year we have Illinois, Colorado, Texas, California.
Hart says the camp's classes give students a taste of the creative arts.
It's about bringing kids together who have a shared interest in the arts, not just visual arts, but also the performing arts, and giving them a chance to experience some new things. Maybe they've only had one art teacher all along in school, and so this exposes them to a wider variety of things and experiences, whether it's learning how to act in a play or learning new ways to use watercolor paints.
Beyond that, Hart says the camp helps build friendships.
Because so many of these kids, you know, a third of them may have known each other from Shenandoah, but they're meeting kids from all over, and kids from all over are meeting kids from Shenandoah, and they build new friendships and relationships and get to share that. And lots of times sports teams and that kind of thing get that kind of camaraderie at a younger age, but there aren't a lot of arts opportunities, and so it's so fun. They just have a blast together, and it's a little lower key than school. It's a camp. It's fun.
That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News.